Welcome, everyone, to another incredible episode of Doing Business with a Servant's Heart. And this guest I met a few weeks ago, but he definitely identifies as a servant. He's doing so many great things. And excited to share what he's doing now and helping people what he's doing with his coaching. Hey, Brett, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Steve. Appreciate the introduction and excited to be here.
Well, you bet. Let's start at the beginning before you got into coaching and what you were doing and what led you there.
Sure. So before I got into coaching, I grew up, observing my father, owning his own business in Paterson, New Jersey back in the 1980s. He worked in a party rental business and, he had a partner within the business. So, I got a very early upfront view of what servant leadership was about and a side-by-side comparison of what it wasn't as well by being in that environment as a young kid. I saw my father get in the trenches with his people, never ask them to do anything he wasn't willing actionably to do himself, and genuinely caring about the people that worked with him on a personal level. And all that led to them being willing to run through walls for him, wanting to work hard on their own behalf, let alone his behalf, where his partner, they would willfully not do the things because there was just, beating him over the head, do as I say, not as I do type of thing. So I think early on, I got a really good glimpse of what serving leadership and strong coaching looks like. And then, as I, went through high school and college and got into the professional world, my first job being at Tavern on the Green as a restaurant manager back in the early 2000s, I was able to take those lessons and apply them. So I actually look at leadership and coaching very closely together. So even though my title was restaurant manager, I viewed myself as a coach even in that particular role.
Well, I ran restaurants too, so you get into a restaurant, that's you're on fire. Talk about learning how to deal with people, huh?
Ooh, wait, I still have a little PTSD about some of the things like, Valentine's Day, where we're doing, 2,500 covers that day, and it's all deuces, two people tables. I got one person yelling at me about the air being too cold. I got, two people yelling at me about the air being too hot. I got this one yelling at me about, the lobster bisque running out. And I'm just, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Spinning plates is, excuse the pun, but that's kind of what you are doing.
Bingo.
With that, that's a great story because I know what you're talking about. Well, how important is team or the team aspect when it comes to all running a restaurant?
The team aspect is everything, both from a logistical coordination standpoint, as well as an overall experiential standpoint for the employees and the team members themselves, and certainly for the customers. I was able to really take that servant leadership model. The Tavern on the Green at the time, just backtrack, was the highest grossing restaurant, highest volume restaurant in the country at that point. I had limited to no restaurant experience. I was just good at connecting with people and, working my tail off. So, I was working 90 to 100 hours a week at that point in my career. And, it was a unionized restaurant aside from anything else. So there was no way an inexperienced 20-year-old kid at a restaurant with 15, 20-year tenured unionized employees was going to come in and tell anyone how to do their job. I had to show them, much like I described with my father, that I'm going to get in there with you. You need me to bust tables, I'll bust tables. You need me to, empty the trash in the bathroom, I'll empty the trash in the bathroom. I don't care. I'm not above anyone or anything just because I have the leadership title. And you saw the evolution of my relationship with the team grow and develop. And I believe, unify the team that much more because they saw that their leaders were willing to get in there with them. And I don't think it had necessarily been done like that to that point. And I was fortunate enough, you know, even as a young, inexperienced manager and leader, to unify and set the example, rather, for the other leaders that were there to, you know, do the same. And it really elevated and the experience and production of the team, which you know, I was very proud of myself. I don't give myself enough credit. You know, no, traditionally, like most people, extraordinarily hard on myself. But as I've reflected years later, it was a cool accomplishment to, you know, a year and a half later when I left, you know, I got a standing ovation from the 150 employees I was overseeing, where at the beginning they were looking at me really cock-eyed.
Trust, to get approved trust. You said work hard a couple of times, and Brett, that's awesome, because I've heard people tell me average skill set, if you work hard, can beat great skill set, because you got to have skill in the work, you know, work hard. Where, and you learned that from your dad. Have you taken that now to your coaching?
Yeah, I definitely have had the throughput from, you know, seeing that, you know, my own experiences now over two decades in leadership and sales management, to the coaching realm, where, you know, it's, you've got to lead by example. You know, at the end of the day, for people to want to follow you, they have to see that you aren't just telling them what to do. You're showcasing through your actions day after day after day that I'm in here with you. You know, we're locked arms. And I've said, you know, in coaching, you know, so many leaders across, you know, a variety of different verticals the last several years, that, you know, one of the big unifying factors in all of this is the ability to really, you know, lock arms and say, hey, none of you work for me. In fact, if anything, it's the opposite. I work for you, and you work with me. No one's ever worked for me. Everyone's always worked with me. And I think that these subtle language choices, when, you know, meant in reality, not just, you know, hyperbole and empty words, resonates with people. They feel that, and they're willing to work hard themselves, because they know that, you know, their leaders are in there with them doing the same things, and not just they're practicing what they preach.
Yeah. How much is gratitude an important part of this?
It's amongst the biggest pieces of the puzzle. You know, if there's no room for, you know, feeling sorry for yourself, there's no room for the blame game and, you know, the victimhood, when you're grateful for everyone and everything. You know, I think I mentioned this when we spoke, but I wake up every morning and I say thank you, and I go to sleep every night and I say thank you. And I write down in my journal every day what I'm grateful for, because, you know, I don't ever want to take anything for granted. And once again, it's something that, if you're leading a team, let alone leading yourself, people are going to pick up on the folks that are, you know, they're just happy. They you know, they've got challenges. Don't you know, get me wrong by any means, but they are grateful for their team members. They're grateful for their opportunities. They're just, they just exude that gratitude, and through their actions, and then their words. Like, you know, to me, when I'm coaching leaders, like, the easiest form of currency that you have available to you is just to show that gratitude and appreciation for your team. Say thank you to them, acknowledge them, praise them. You do that, and regrettably, you're already in the upper percentiles of leaders that they've likely experienced to this point.
Well said, Brett. That's unfortunately, it's not easy for everybody. That's when everybody can be a leader. But let's flip it. You're a coach and you work with sales teams and leadership. There's the other side of it. You've got an employee that's just not a good employee. How do you teach to handle that?
Yeah, it's a topic that comes up regularly. I was actually on a call right before this, and we were talking about this subject. You know, how do you hold people accountable to doing the things that are in their best interest to do that are going to lead to success. So, you know, when you've got those individuals, you know, I always coach my leaders to make sure you know the person, you know what makes them tick, you know what gets them jazzed up on a personal level, you know what brings them to the office or wherever they work on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, when they're, you know, looking to make money, what they want to do with that money, what it's going to mean for their life, their family's life, et cetera. So peeling back the layers of the onion on a person by person basis, rather than taking an overgeneralized approach to problem solving, is a real starting point with all this. Because when you know the individuals on your team, you know, those nuances, and you've, you know, been vulnerable yourself and, you know, shown I'm not perfect, here's, you know, some of my challenges and here's how I've overcome them, and, you know, showing an active interest in them on a personal level, it becomes much easier to have the difficult conversations with those folks, because they know you care and you're coming from a place of just trying to help them do all the things that they said they were going to do. And that's a big piece of the puzzle is, you know, really identifying the people whose actions and words are not congruent and nipping that in the bud early and often by having direct conversations. Hey, you know, you said you want to do X, Y, and Z. What's holding you back? What can I do to help you get there? And documenting those things, you know, having a really clear cut. All right, what's going well? How can we leverage it for additional success? Where are your areas of opportunity? What are you actively doing to address them? What do you need from me to help you in any of this? Here are my expectations of you. And having that be progressive month over month, quarter over quarter. And if you're noticing that, you know, the actions aren't matching the words, progressively escalating the conversation to be like, hey, listen, you know, I want you to win. You know, you've said you want to win. You've said you understand how doing these things, these actions, these behaviors will lead to you winning, yet you're not doing them. If you're not willing to do those things on a long enough timeline, I'm unfortunately going to have to find people that will. Again, I want it to be you. What do you need from me to make that happen? And I found that being straightforward like that, especially against the backdrop of, you know, showcasing that you care and you are delivering on anything they need from a professional skill development standpoint. Inevitably, when you have to regrettably relieve people of their duty, I'd say no less than 50% of the times I personally had to terminate individuals, they thanked me on the way out because you told me, you said it, you gave me the chance. And said, listen, you know, I hope you learn from this, and I'm here to support you beyond. I just want you to know that, you know, this is still an area of opportunity for you, and, you know, you can lean on me. You could call me in the aftermath.
Yeah,
and it's not personal. And these are key phrases that I use with my leaders: is identifying skill versus will gaps, and, you know, nipping the will gaps in the bud, and you know, people whose actions match your words, and, you know, tough on standards, not on people.
I like that phrase. That's a good one. Leaders have a problem making difficult conversations. How do you work with it? You know, coach comes to you and says, I got to talk to this employee. I probably got to fire them, but I don't want to. I'll be short-staffed. I'll be this. I'll be that. How do you handle that? Because I hear that. It's like, you know, I'm short-staffed already at my restaurant. I get to let this guy go. I know he's terrible, but I gotta let him go because he's hurting the team.
Right.
How do you handle that?
Yeah, you have to. It's short-term pain for long-term gain. You know, because what happens, bad festers and, you know, bad spreads quicker than good, regrettably.
Yeah.
So it's this not so hidden cost of keeping someone on there just to have the body. Because they're not just negatively impacting themselves, they're negatively impacting the person to the left, to the right of them, because oftentimes those are the same folks that are blaming everyone but themselves for why they're not having success. So, yeah, it's going to mean more hours and harder work for other people, but you know, you've got to regrettably move along from those people sooner rather than later. And I see people hang on way past their expiration date for that reason. And I can't recall of any time where I've seen that working out favorably for anyone involved. And even the person who's in that position, if they're that unhappy and, you know, they're griping about these things regularly and their actions aren't going to match their words, then helping them find whatever it is that will do that with them. So, you know, that's typically how
I love how you said that, because it happens with everybody. And it also goes down to customer level. You know, let's use a restaurant. You've got a bad waiter and he's treating his customers bad and your employees, it's a bad animal throughout the whole business. So with your coaching, how does it work? You know, I'm become a client with you. Walk me through the steps of what that looks like.
Yeah, so I do a very thorough vetting process up front with the people that I work with. I want to make sure it's a right fit on both sides of the equation. I'm sorry, my kids are
that's all right. You
know, hollering in the background here. So I go through, I'm like, you know, what's the problem you're looking to solve? You know, where are you currently having success and how can we leverage that for additional success? Where are your areas of opportunity? How are you actively addressing them? What are your top two personal goals? What are your top two professional goals? So I go through this whole intake to, you know, really drive towards, you know, the root cause opportunities for people. You know, I want to know as much information up front because then I can customize the approach thereafter. You know, I standardize it from the intake perspective, and then I customize it thereafter based off of the responses that I get from them. And, you know, I found that in certain cases, I've had to turn away people because it wasn't the right fit. I could just sense from their answers that they weren't willing, there's that word again, willing to put in the work. They're just looking for the quick solve, the magic bullet. And that's not how I do things. So I get these answers and then we start meeting on a weekly basis to have a progressive dialogue. So I don't leave any session without some sort of actionable takeaway for them to have. I'm sorry, Steve. Okay, you got it. Steve, I'm sorry about this.
That's all right. So you do actionable items, which I love. So they got homework, basically.
Yeah, because, you know, I've invested quite a bit of time, money, and resources into my own coaching and personal development. And the big distinction for me has always been, you know, there's something actionable for you to do. Because otherwise it's just conceptual and, you know, knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power. So, you know, we're having these conversations and every single time there's one, two, depending on who it is and what they're trying to accomplish, three at most actionable things for them to do between this week and next week mm-hmm. that I'm going to hold them accountable to. You know, I'm not going to let you get away with investing your hard-earned money into working with me and then not doing the work that is going to lead to the results that you're paying me to help you accomplish. And I take a lot of pride in that. And like I said, I've had to, you know, turn away clients and I've also had to let go of clients in certain cases, you know, as probably holding on to them past the expiration date because I care a lot and I want it for them. And they say they want it. So I believe them until they showcase that, you know, they're not quite there yet in the willingness to put in the work that's going to lead to those successful outcomes.
And a good servant has that mindset. It's going to benefit both of us if I let them go, whether it's an employee, your client, or the client doesn't fit. I really want to work with you, Brett. You know, Steve, let's find you somebody else. I know you do that, which again is a servant mentality. It's like, hey, I'm not a good fit, but I think you need to talk to this guy or this gal. And it's so important that it's hard to do. but it's got to be done.
It's taken me a while to evolve into that. You know, I'm very empathetic, and I believe people when they speak, and sometimes, you know, to my own detriment over the course of my life and career. But I'd rather operate with a, you know, just an empathetic mindset, or just, you know, empathy as the leader here, because I do care. And I find that because I care, people are willing to open up to me quickly and give me the information that I need to best help them get out of their own way, which is typically what the issue is with most people. It's self-inflicted. You know, clearly there's external challenges and, you know, strategy that needs to be applied to, you know, go in particular directions of achievement. But more often than not, it's the self-limiting beliefs and, you know, self-imposed obstacles that once we tackle those and break those down, that it just frees people up to fly and move much more quickly and linearly towards the strategic objective.
What is your why?
My why is I want to make a difference in every single interaction I ever have, because it's something that lights up my soul. I love seeing people win. You know, I want as deeply as humanly possible to see everyone win, everyone to be happy, everyone to be successful. And, you know, it's tough reconciling that at times, because I know it's not realistic per se, but that doesn't stop me from, you know, wanting that to be the case and, you know, doing everything I can in my power to make that be the case. You know, I journal every single day. And as part of my journaling, one of the things that I've written down now for 2 years straight is treat everyone you come in contact with as though they're the most important person in the world. And I live that way, because why not? Why the hell not? You know, and it can be something as easy as eye contact and a smile. Yep. It can be, hey, I love your shirt. It can be as in depth as, you know, the coaching and consulting and, you know, all of that, the speaking engagements on a broader scale. But I want to leave people feeling better about themselves after having interacted with me or consumed, you know, any, you know, content that I have, than they did walking into that.
I love it. You're definitely a servant, and I appreciate you. God bless you for what you're doing. You've put a lot of nuggets out there. I'm sure people want to reach out to you. How can they reach out to you?
You can go to my website, at Knopf Knows Solutions. I'm on social media at Knopf Knows on Instagram, Brett Knopf at LinkedIn, Carrier Pigeon, Smoke Signal, whatever you got to do. just throw up the sign and I will be there. But, like you said, I just, anyone that just wants to have a conversation really about anything, I'm always game.
Well, I'm going to add to it, because I'm going to do something crazy here. So, audience, the first two people that reach out to Chris, I mean, Brett, they can buy. I'm going to give them a gift. I am going to send them a gift. Because wow, that's how important it is for people to meet with you. And it doesn't have to be a sale. If you just reach out to them to do a discovery call or ask a question, I want people to reach out to Brett, because you're doing good things. Your whole show today was about serving. And that's what we're all about. I love that. So Brett will reach out to me when somebody mentions the show, and then I'll get you guys a gift. And don't be shy. And if I've sent gifts out, still reach out to him. I want 100 people to reach out. I want his calendar full, because he said he wants to help people. We're going to give him people to help.
I love it. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're so welcome. I loved having you on the show. Thank you for being on. Can I ask a favor?
By all means.
Can you leave my audience one piece of advice, something maybe I've not talked about that's helped you in your great journey?
Yeah, by all means. You know, I've had the same piece of advice for an extended period of time here, and it served myself and others really well. And that's, number one, identify in as much detail as possible what you want to do in your life and business. I mean, hyper specificity along those lines. Number two, identify the people that are doing that at an elite level. And if you can gain one-on-one access to them, where it's affordable or just anything, do that so you can have direct actionable feedback to utilize. If not, there's varying different ways to see and hear what elite performers are doing, whether it's books or great podcasts like this, or, you know, small group coaching or whatever the case may be. But follow, success leaves clues. And, you know, if you've clearly identified what you want to do and who's doing it at a high level, take it, emulate it, gather those data points. And whether it works for you or doesn't work for you is almost secondary. You just get in the arena and you get that data and that feedback from taking action, and you're going to start to put the puzzle pieces together. And to me, that's the most linear route to having success in any area rather than trying to figure it all out yourself.